Vayoy Mehashem al Liboy, God said to himself in his heart, I'm not going to do this again. I'm not going to curse the earth for the sake of man. So the his question is, it's a really simple question. How does Noach know what God is thinking? I mean, it's not like Vayoyim Hashem El Noach, you know? Later God says to Noach, I'm going to make a covenant with you. And this, but this internal dialogue that God is having, where do we get this? How does Noach know? So Noach knows this thought. Noach finds that he himself is changed after the flood, and that now he has a fear of letting go, of acting out, that he didn't have before the flood. Noach felt we as human beings must not allow ourselves the license to be mispashet, which means to spread. We have to have boundaries. Otherwise, we're going to break down as a society again. If we're going to rebuild and we're going to evolve, you know, as human beings, we have to have rules that are not challengeable. Rules that human beings agree on constitute human behavior. We have to have a set of accepted norms that sometimes people will break them, but everybody will agree that the rules have been broken, and that, you know, you don't have to teach those rules, that those rules are self-understood, and that the way that we define ourselves as human beings is through those boundaries. You don't have to teach somebody that it's wrong to murder people. Because we know that. How do we know that? We teach that to each other from earliest childhood. There are things that we don't even need to say out loud. You know, it's wrong to steal the food from somebody else's plate, from somebody else's mouth, from somebody else's bag, from somebody else's house, that it's wrong to take things that don't belong to you. We don't need to be taught that because we as human beings define ourselves by these norms that we are taught by our parents, that we teach to our children. And when we meet each other, we don't have to reconfirm those things, that they're understood. And that's why, you know, as we walk on the street, we intermingle with people because we are not afraid that we are going to be robbed, murdered, or whatever, raped by the person we meet on the street. The thing is that when societies become really big, that there are people who break those laws, but those laws are lawbreakers. They're not people who say this is a new law or there is no law. And this only happened, this is an evolution of mankind, right? That not, this is what the Torah is telling us, that when Noach came out of the Teva, he felt the need for a covenant. What's the meaning of a covenant? You know, the idea of a covenant is that, you know, I make a promise with you that is binding on my children and your children, right? A covenant can't be broken, even by the people who were not there at the time. There's such a concept in humanity as covenant, which is something that crosses all boundaries of all ages and all places, that human beings have this idea that things are passed on from generation to generation. Ideas, property, beliefs, loves, and hates. That these things, you know, can be impressed from generation to generation. These ideas only came to Noach after the coming out and the repopulation of the earth. And it comes to Noach as a sense that, oh, this cannot happen again. We cannot allow this again. We must not get to that state where we induce in nature this upheaval where that threatens our existence. We have to learn to coexist as people with people, and we have to learn to coexist with the earth. Neuer's brilliance, or if you want to say Neuer's naivete, is his understanding that this feeling is coming up in him because this is the thought that is going through the mind of God. God is saying, no more catastrophic upheaval, no more like get rid of the old and bring the new. No more living as God, the creator, without boundaries. I'm setting myself a boundary, says God. I am never going to do this again. Under any circumstances am I going to allow this to happen again in my world. So Noach mirrors God, and God is mirroring Noach. Noach understands, you know what, I have to be in control of myself. So he understands that this is also what is going on in the will of God. Then God says, I'm never going to curse the earth again. So then, God makes a covenant with Noach. He says, and it will be when I bring clouds on the earth, and the rainbow will be seen in the cloud. So, the word nir'oso, it will be seen. The Ishbitzer picks up on that word, and he brings something like it from the Gemara. So, first of all, what is onon? An onon is a cloud. It's something that conceals. Whenever we get concealment in the Torah, whenever we get the concealment in ourselves, we're talking about yira, about fear. The future is in a cloud. The future is unclear. We are afraid only of the future. So, Onon, Yira, Hester, these ideas of things being hidden, they are associated with the mid of Gevura, with fear, uncertainty. Vekeshes, what is the symbol of the bow? Miftach Oiz, that is a symbol of confidence. And you know, it's in a sense, it's a very earthy symbol, because it's a very sexual symbol. And the person, you know, particularly as a male symbol, right? The bow that shoots the arrows. You know, on Lag BaOmer, it's one of the symbols. On Lag BaOmer, we take the bow and arrow and we shoot. And this is the midah of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, who was the holiest of the holy. The idea of the bow as being a sign of miftach ois, a sign of self-confidence. Because in every, when you are in the deepest, most powerful fear, even when you are in the cloud, even when you are in the fear and you don't know what's going to happen, and you know the future is foggy, you still have to have bitochen. You still have to have big bitochen. Bitochen godol. You have to have confidence and faith. And this is, God says to Noach, I am planting this inside you. And this is what we learn in the Zohar. Don't look to greet the Messiah until you see the rainbow in shining colors. What does that mean? And this is the Ishbitzer thing. He says, do you know when, how will we know that it's the time? We'll know it because we'll feel in ourselves the confidence that it's going to happen. So that's the metaphor. Don't wait for Mashiach, and don't expect Mashiach to come until you see the rainbow, until you have the multicolored bow, until you feel that confidence. in all the colors. That the self-confidence that comes as a gift from God will be boiled, will be obvious, prominent. And it will be like there, right there in front of your eyes. Then you can expect Mashiach to be coming, because, again, as above, so below. As below, so above. If we are feeling that the redemption is imminent, then it's because the redemption is imminent. You find a dialogue in the Gemara. Ksubas, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says to Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Niroso hakeshes biyomecho. Has the rainbow been seen in your time? It's interesting, when I was a kid and we were learning this, we were always told that the rainbow is a sign that God is angry with us, and it's only because of the covenant that he doesn't destroy the world, that the rainbow is somehow an omen, a portent of Gevura, evil, that there's something not nice, not welcome. And so far as I know, that is a common Jewish take on this natural phenomenon. And it comes from the reading of the Gemara that Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is saying to him, was it ever seen in your lifetime? Because if it was seen in your lifetime, it must be that there was gevura, that there was times of anger, that God was angry, wanted to destroy the world. So you know, it says something about you as a tzaddik, as a righteous person, that you couldn't protect the people on earth with your holiness, and that the rainbow was seen sometimes, which is the, you know, saying God is holding himself back from destroying the world. The Ishbitzer sees it exactly the opposite. He says, he didn't say to him, have you seen the rainbow? Have you seen the rainbow in your time? Which would then bear that translation and that meaning. He says, no. The Niroso, has the rainbow been seen? Mashma lefa'omim v'loy b'tminis means, has the rainbow come and gone? Because the rainbow coming and going, that is a bad sign. He always saw the rainbow. He was the rainbow. He was that miftach ois, that confidence, that faith that everything is going to be good. And where does it come from that we have this confidence? How does God plant that in us? And how do we plant it in ourselves? With the parsha of Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Shunoisim Tekufis Biev Belev Hamiach Lenachazdei, because when we say that with Kavana, we implant the confidence in ourselves and the faith to, you know, not to lose sight of the good things that are coming to us. So then the Ishbitzer says, Vayhi Kol Ha'oretz Sofa Achas Udvorim Achodim. So the whole world shared the same speech and uniform words. So the Ishbitzer points out the obvious. V'loy ne'em eloshin loshoin echad. The Torah doesn't use the word loshoin, that it was a single language. The word loshoin means tongue, right? And instead the Torah says, v'hoye kol ha'oretz sofo achas. Sofo are lips. So, of course, in order to speak, we need both lips and tongue. But generally, when we talk about speech, we talk about language, which is from the Latin lingua, which is, you know, a tongue. There's no other meaning. Language means a tongue. And in Hebrew, you've got Lashon HaKodesh, which translates as the holy tongue. And in fact, even in English, the word for language is tongue. But we don't use the word tongue here in this passage. It says, Sofa achas, one lip, right? One set of lips. Udvorim achodim, in single words. So the Ishbitzer says an amazing thing. If I hadn't seen it written here, you know, I wouldn't be able to, like, nobody could say such a thing. He says, Ke'ikel loshen, hu loshen HaKodesh. When we talk in the Torah about loshen, language, we're referring to loshen HaKodesh, the holy language, the holy tongue. Ki loshen hakodesh, this is what he says. What does it mean, Lashon HaKodesh? It's not necessarily the language that your Siddur is written in, or even the language that the Ten Commandments are written. Lashon HaKodesh, humimah shenitveh b'omik halev. It is what is planted in the depths of the heart. It is the heart's natural language. V'noivea mishodesh hachayim, and it flows from the source, from the root of the life force. When the Eishbitzer talks about chayim, shodesh hachayim, he's talking about God, the divine that flows, that lives, that God is transformed, so to speak, into the biology of life, from the divinity of life into the biology of life through creation, through us, and that is that manifests a speech, that we have that faculty of words, that we have words with which to talk about words, that we have words with which we can talk about the words that we talk about words. Epistemology, that we have ideas, that we can look at the language with which we make tools to examine language. This comes from the fact that language, real language, is the expression of the mind of the divine, which is to say that it is the life force flowing through the universe. Real Loshin, real language, Loshin HaKodesh, the holy tongue, is the expression of, and it comes through the heart. V'shaya Loshinois, and other languages, Nikroim, Loshin Algim, they are called mocking tongues. And he brings a posik in Yeshaya, the posik says, a mocking language without bina. Nilag Loshin, ain bina. What is bina? She'ein le'shoyrish chaim b'liboy, ki bina hu b'leiv. Bina, whenever we talk about the sphere of bina, even though we associate it with the left side of the brain, but we say, bina bo ha'leiv meivin. In a way, you could say that the Kabbalists don't think that the heart is that pump, that muscle in the middle of the chest, but rather it's the left side of the brain. Bina is the ability to take our emotions and turn them into words, to take our desires and turn them into language and speech. That is connected to the sphere of Bina. And there, if the things you are talking come out of your heart, come out of Bina, that is not Lashon Elgin, that's Lashon HaKodesh. So the Eishbitzer is saying, you can talk, you can be speaking Hebrew, but it's not Lashon HaKodesh. Because if it's not language that comes from the heart, if it isn't speaking, if it isn't connected to the Shodesh HaChaim, if it doesn't represent a flow of the life force of the divine, then it's not Lashon HaKodesh. V'dor HaFloga, and the generation of the dispersal, afshe dibru b'loshon kodesh, even though they were speaking Hebrew, mikol mokem lo hoy lahem shodesh chaim, they weren't connected to the life force. Rak min ha-sofa l'chutz, it was from the lips outwards, and that's why the Torah calls it sofa achas, speech from the lips outwards. It was like the twittering or the whistling of the birds or the lowing of the cows. I mean, they're communicating. Birds are expressing something. They're calling to one another. They're saying, this is my territory. Listen to me, I'm looking for a mate. There are all the things that birds and animals are doing with their calls, but they're not speaking. They're not speaking. And this is a really profound thing the Eishbitzer is trying to put here into these words, right? It's like, if you are not connected to the divine inside you, in other words, if you don't really know what you're thinking and feeling and the deepest depth, then your speech is just from the lips out. It's not Lashon HaKodesh, even when you... So what does that say about us when we open up the Siddur and we say these Hebrew things, but it's not coming from the Shoresh HaChaim? Then it's not Lashon HaKodesh. He says, V'chein be'inyan anochash. And so if we go back and we look at the story of the serpent, the snake in the Garden of Eden, Shehikshu kalam afarshim, that all the commentators ask, Lama loy matzonu biklolosoi, why don't we find that when God says, Orur, he says to the serpent, you're cursed, right? How could it says you're going to have to walk on your stomach, you're going to have to eat the dust, and so on. How come we don't find that God said to him, Shiyut mi menu l'shayna, and I'm going to take away from you the power of speech, that you won't be able to talk anymore? He says, Ach be'emes lehoi lo loshen b'shayrish. But we can see, the Ishbitzer says, that the serpent never really could speak. He could say words, but that wasn't speech, that wasn't language, that didn't come from the heart. If the first thing that the Torah says, the Nochash said, the snake said, Af ki omar alekim. So I believe, yeah, God said you can't eat from the tree of knowledge, from the trees of the garden. And Chava says, no, God didn't say that. God said we can eat from all the trees of the garden. So the first words that come out of the snake's mouth are this Lashon Hara about God, you know. Oh, come on, God told you not to eat anything? So the Ishbitzer says, that was never speech. That didn't come from the Shoresh HaChaim of any living creature. That wasn't God speaking. That was the Nochash calling to Chava. You know, that wasn't speech. It's interesting that we now look at the whole... The Ishbitzer say, now we look at that whole generation of the dispersal, these people who built the Tower of Babel. You know, the word Babel, when we talk about the Babel of tongues, he's babbling. I mean, this is part of our, you know, it's become part of our language. This idea that people can all be speaking and yet nobody's really using language. Because somewhere deep inside, it's not connected to anything holy or real. And that even if you're using the Siddur, the Chumash, the Torah even, and if those words are not coming from your heart, it's not Lashon HaKodesh. Shoyt, the next Torah, Ba'asora Doiris Shemei Odom Va'ad Noyach, in the 10 generations of Odom to Noyach, Nema Etzel Kol Echad, it says by each one, Va'yechi, and he lived so many years, and then he gave birth to a son called such and such. And then he lived so many years after he gave birth to so and so, and he had sons and daughters. And then there's a third pasuk that says, "Vayhi kol yemei Adam, vayhi kol yemei Shez." It says, "And all the days of this person were so many, and then he died." And in the 10 generations from Noach to Avram, it doesn't say "Vayhi kol yemei." It says he was this age and he gave birth to so and so, and then he lived so many years after giving birth to so-and-so and had other children, but then it doesn't have this coda on the end, which is, and he lived so and so many years, and these are all the years of his life. So the Ishbitzer says we can understand this with a verse in Proverbs. Gil yogil avi tzadik, joy will rejoice the father of the tzadik, v'yoylet chocham yismach boy, and he who begets the wise child will rejoice in him. So the Ishbitzer notes, "V'leinema avi etzel chocham." It says the father of the tzaddik will rejoice, and then it says he who begets the chocham. It doesn't say the father of the chocham will rejoice. K'mo shenema etzel tzaddik avi tzaddik. Ach ho'inyan hukech. it's like this. Kishenoyled loho odom ben tzaddik, if a person has a righteous child, os gam hu av shayach boy, then there's something of the father, there's something of the mother, the parent is there in the child. Ki gam behu av nimtza hamadrega azois behatzne. Because the parent also had these virtues, even if they were only in potential. In the child, these virtues have manifest as real behavior, and so the child is a tzaddik. But the child is still connected to its parents, and the parents are still connected to the child. But when a child is born who is a chocham, we're talking about a child that is mechadesh, a child that brings something new, a new way of looking at the Torah, brings into the world new, novel Torah. Also, hoylodah chadusha, this is a new birth. Ve'ein shem shayches lohaav etzel haben. And you can't say that this child is now manifesting some genius that was in the father. Ki yodav chadush, because the child is manifesting its own genius, not something that it has inherited. So that's why it doesn't even say by the Chocham, let the father rejoice in the wise son. Because the father and the son here don't have to be spoken about in the same sentence. Any more than anybody else in the world. The teachers that this child has, the friends that this child has, the books that this child is reading and learning, they are equally the father of the genius, of the newness, of the new ideas and the creativity. Alkein of Araksiv, so what does it say? Yismach boy, he should rejoice in him. Who should rejoice in him? And Nikol Oilem Yismach boy. Let the whole world rejoice in him. Vlayasko oy baviv rakboy. And so the father is no longer part of the celebration of the child. Right? Like it's easy to look at it from the terms of, in the Goyish world, like Albert Einstein, recognized everywhere as a name, as a brilliant genius. Nobody really interested in how Einstein's father is responsible for the, insights and the genius and the new discoveries that Einstein gave birth to, because not connected. Kinoyle tchochem b'divrei Torah, and same thing is when somebody brings down new Torah to the world, we don't see the connection between that person and their father. V'az kala oylem b'simcha, the whole world is rejoicing with the newness. V'yasku b'haben v'loy b'haaf, and there's a kind of neglect now of the father, because everybody's busy studying what the son has done. And so the 10 generations that come between Adam and Noach, it says, Vayihi kol yemei, and it was at the end, after it says that he gave birth to sons and daughters, it says, and all the days of his life equaled so many and so many. Why? Af shehoyled es haben, because even though he's given birth to the child, im kol zeh yesh shaychus lasik ba'av, there is still connection, and we still have business with the father. Ki Noach ish tzadik, because the Torah tells us that Noach is a saint. So, ve'etzla yesh shaychus la'av, he's connected to his father all the way back to Adam, because Noach is expressing some of the saintliness of Adam. Avo ba'asor edoy shem Noach va'ad Avraham, but in the 10 generations between Noach and Avraham, lo ne'ema vahi kol yimei, it doesn't say, and all the days of the life were, ki Avraham Avinu hoya chocham b'divrei Torah, because Avraham Avinu is this genius who brings down new thinking to the world. Like the Gemara says, Avraham Avinu obeyed, fulfilled all the Torah, even the commandments of Erev Tavshilin, before the Torah was given, that out of his experience came the Torah. That the Gemara says, Nasu shnei kloyois yoyatsois, like kemayonois, that his kidneys became advisors, like their wellsprings, they became his rebs. And The water that flowed through him was like Torah. So there's no real connection with his father because he's bringing down new Torah. And that's why it doesn't say after the child is born that there is a continual connection. Because there's not really anything that we can now learn from Terach and from his father. Really, it's what Avraham is teaching us now, which is completely new, and this is what we are rejoicing with. So let's go back to the first Torah. Eile toldos Noach. These are the generations of Noach. So God says to Noach, Haseh lecho tevas atzei goyfe, make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Idin hateva, the meaning of the ark. Shenosan HaKadosh Baruch Hu etz v'hagona le-Noach. God gives Noach practical advice at Sheyavru Yimei Hazam, how to deal with the time, the days of rage and fury. And the same applies to anybody who lives in this world who hasn't reached some kind of perfection and enlightenment. Can learn from the story of how Noach builds the ark and the architecture of the ark and the description of it, how to protect, how to hide himself, take care not to be caught up in the maelstrom of the violence and rage that is there in the world. And so our sages of blessed memory said, if a person sees that painful things are happening, suffering, should run to the rooms, to the cubby holes, to the rooms inside, the inner rooms of the Torah, and the Torah will give him clues, advice on how to protect himself. So the Ishbisa says, let's look. We learn in the Gemara Psochim, there are three who are beloved of God. Somebody who does not go into a rage, and somebody who does not get drunk, intoxicated, and somebody who lets go, somebody who doesn't insist on being right. So it's important to distinguish among anger and rage. When I'm angry, then some part of me is telling me something is wrong, and I may be mistaken in my perception, but the point of anger is as an alert to tell me something isn't right. Something needs to be examined, maybe some boundary has been breached, or I may be walking into a situation that could potentially be harmful to me one way or another, or something has been done to me, some part of my body, some part of my psyche, my soul is under attack. I need to look and examine and stop whatever is happening. That's the function of anger. And it comes from a very primitive place in the limbic system, right underneath the brain. And it's part of the flight or fight response that all creatures have. Chaos that we're talking about here is a rage. And rage is a mood and mind-altering experience. It's really when the endocrinal system becomes involved in the anger and is allowed to flood the system, the body, the mind, with all kinds of hormones, adrenaline and testosterone or whatever it is, that takes the mind, takes control of the mind from the alert into the aggressive, into the mindless, it's a kind of intoxication. We talk about the rageaholic, the person who can change their mood from depression to euphoria simply by going off like a box of fireworks at someone. And, you know, then they get that flood of adrenaline and endorphins and stuff like that. And, you know, the person that they went off on, you know, walks away feeling like they've had the floor wiped for them, right? And the person who had the rage can go home and feel, you know, great. I feel great. I'm not a failure, you know, like I'm Mr. Macho. Chaos is really, once you see through the skeleton, sort of the infrastructure, you see clearly the difference between anger and rage. So the Gemara says God loves someone who doesn't get into a rage. Ve'enu mishtaka, and someone who doesn't use chemicals or substances to become spiritual, right? People think that they can become spiritual by using spirits, you know, that there is something spirited about being drunk. And you know, even amongst us and amongst the Hasidim, sometimes we see that there is a confusion. And people abuse chemicals. The Gemara says, Mishena Mishtaka, somebody who doesn't get drunk, God loves that person. Right? Because, again, the whole point of inebriation and intoxication, even though we don't always feel it, is that there is a loss of judgment, a loss of control, a loss of responsibility, and of course, a loss of duty. We can't be all the things that we can be when we're drunk. And finally, the third one, which is like the flip side of those two, Mishena Mava Midoisav, so somebody who refuses to let go of being right. That is an awesomely horrible thing, you know. Like one of the prayers I saw once on the, I forget, on a car mirror, like one of those hangy things, you know, it was like, God protect me from this, and God, please, I don't want to always be right, because God knows I'm going to need some friends in the end, right? Like there's something about always being right that is really, makes a person really repugnant, right? And God says specifically, you know, don't always be right. Just let go. Don't always insist on you know, insisting on the truth. I insist on the truth. No, you got to like admit to me that you did wrong, and I want you. I'm not going to let go until you admit that you did wrong, and then I like mave amidosa. Just let go. Walk away. Don't always be insisting on your rights. Of course, the flip side is that God can insist on His rights. You know, and then where are we? Right? How many laws have we broken? You know, how many times, if God says, well, I'm not going to let go until you admit all the things that you've done wrong, you know, it's like, we would never be done with our confession. Mishaina Koyas, the Ishbitz explains, when we talk about somebody who doesn't get into a rage, Mishaina Marishim Kaspapoy, it means that they don't act it out. Right, because sometimes the endocrine system just kicks in, right, and we find ourselves in a rage. So, you know, what does that mean? Then I become hated of God? No, it's like I can still say no, even if I'm feeling like this. I'm gonna damp it down. The inena mishtakya, what does it mean? Somebody who doesn't get intoxicated, and sheishli yishva das, somebody who has a certain amount of serenity. You know, somebody who has faith, somebody who recognizes that, you know, it's not my world, I'm not the director and the producer and the main actor, you know, the star, it's not me, the world doesn't revolve around me. Because when a person gets drunk, that's really what happens. They become the center of the universe. And somebody who, you know, overlooks his rights means that even that little bit of rage that we do have, it just lets it go, just removes it and clears it out from the heart. Just doesn't even hang on to the anger at all. Just doesn't have resentments. Because if you have resentments, it's very difficult not to try and be right and insist on being right. And the insistence of being right comes from that resentment that the person is hanging on to. And it's on these three that the ark hints. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Don't be going to rage. Kigofris, when we talk about fire and brimstone, brimstone in Hebrew is gofris, which is the same root as the gopher, this wood. So the Ishmael says it's hinting at this rage that you have to box it up. That you become master of it and not allow it to just flare up. Then you have to make like pigeonholes in the box, which is the equivalent of saying don't get intoxicated, but you have to maintain this level of comfortable thought, relaxed thought, serene thought. Because kinim talks about these means these little rooms, cubicles. Somebody who has a warehouse full of little cubicles. You can't just be running around the same as you would if you have three rooms. You got 3,000 rooms. You know, in order for you to be on top of things, you have to stay sober, and you have to know the use of each room, where it is, what you've got in it. And the Mishnah of Kinim also talks about rooms, or boxes, or pigeonholes. So somebody who doesn't have serenity of mind and a pure heart can only learn this Mishnah on a surface, but can never get down to the deep truth, which means the Kabbalah. And then the Torah says, you have to coat the inside and the outside of the ark with pitch. So now you've got the box, you've got it all sorted out, now you have to clean it inside and out. You have to coat it with non-stick, or not with non-stick, because pitch is pretty much the sticky. But you have to coat it with waterproofing, right? So that it becomes impermeable. Vechofarto, because the word, the expression vechofarto, and you should, you know, like pitch it, you should cover it with pitch. Also has the word kapora, which means to cleanse. You have to cleanse your heart of resentments, so that the anger that you may have had doesn't leave some kind of an imprint on your heart. And these are basics of how to live in the world. We have to really become alert to rage when it comes up, and how to deal with it, and what are the ways that we can live to make sure that we don't become the victims of our own rage. And resentments is the ultimate punishment for rage, because people, those of us who have suffered at one time or another with rage, have also suffered with resentments, and even after the rage is gone, the resentments remain, and there is nothing under heaven that will cut us off from the sunlight of the soul like a resentment. The dimensions of the ark, they come together to make the word lashon, which means tongue. Gimel me'ez oirech is 300 cubits long, which is the shin. Chamishim roichev, 50 wide, which is the nun. And Shloshim Kamer was 30 high, which is the Lamed. And with the Torah that we learned from the end of this parasha, where it talks about all the world was one speech in uniform words, it doesn't use the word Loshen, because Loshen, when we talk about Loshen, we're talking about something that flows from the heart, words that are divinely inspired when we're connected to our deeper self. And then you have the other kind, which is the snake kind, which is the Loshon Sheker. And that is associated with life that is not divine. וגם אלו השיעורים הם נגד בכל לבבך, בכל נפשך, בכל מידך. We find that in the Shema, again, we refer to the Shema as being that place from which we take our tekufis, from which we take our confidence, our boldness to face the world in the future, comes from the Shema. And it says you shall love God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your everything. So b'chol levavch, b'chol nafshach, b'chol mo'edach, these three levels of heart, soul, and everything, these are represented by these three, the lamed, the 30 cubits of the height, keneged b'chol levavch, that begins with the lamed, your heart. Nun, the 50 cubits wide, neged nafshach, begins with the nun, that corresponds to the soul. So the Ishbitz is also saying that in some ways there's a dimension to the human mind, and that the heart is the vertical dimension and the soul is the horizontal dimension. V'shin me'ois oirech, and the 300 neged b'chol ma'oidcho, that corresponds to all the all. Ki ma'oid, the word ma'oid that we translate with all your might, or with all your money. However we translate that word, b'chol ma'oidcho, the word ma'oid just means much. Much what? Much everything. Hayne b'chol ma shiyuchol odem l'shar b'dat elayis. Whatever you can think of and more. That is what the word ma'oid means. Al zeh roimez oides hashin. And then here the Ishbitz says something which I haven't seen anywhere else. He says that the letter shin represents that concept of ma'oid, of more, of most, of maximum. Ki ashinu achreinu sheba aleph beis, because shin is really the last letter of the aleph beis. Ki soid atof hu komis lo'olam habo, because the letter tof really doesn't belong in the aleph beis, it belongs in the next aleph beis, the aleph beis of the future. V'lechein b'chol mokoim shirotzu achachomim, in every place where the sages wanted to be megazim, they wanted to what's the word? They wanted to exaggerate. Right? Whenever the Chachamim wanted to make an exaggeration, Gazmu Kishloish Meis, they used the phrase 300. We find in the Gemara says that there was like this gold in there was like a gold tree in the sanctuary, and there was a time when 300 priests were going to collect the bits of gold. You know, obviously. 300 priests couldn't fit into that room in the sanctuary. 30 priests couldn't have fitted in there. So why did the Gemara use the number 300? Because when it wants to be megazim, when the Gemara looks for a number to exaggerate, it uses the word 300. That's the number, and it happens quite a few times in the Shas that. And Rashi says Guzma. We recognize that number, because that number represents Mo'id. So you have to love God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your exaggeration, with even more than that. Because the letter Tav, which is really the last letter, which we think of as the last letter, actually is a secret representing the world to come. Tzoy ha'atal seleteva, make a window for the ark. Hainu shiteda ki haka b'dei shaman. You have to know everything is from heaven, and that is the window. That's the window that lets in the light on everything that happens in your life. So it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter what's going on, whether you're in the middle of something good or in the middle of something bad, or something boring and indifferent. Tzoy ha'atal seleteva, the window that you have to make is to see that everything is from heaven, even the fear of heaven. Kitzoya haina behiris vidi, because that's what we mean when we talk about a window. We mean that which sheds light and clarity. Ve'al amo techalenu milmala, and then you have to bring the ark to a point no wider than a cubit on the top. And ishitutzamtzim b'kol kabulas hashefa hashpo'osh leitiyarafzin. Don't be greedy. When, you know, this ark is 300 cubits long and 50 wide, right? It's massive, but it comes to a point at the top of one cubit, because when we're receiving, we don't receive, we don't spread out like, you know, 300 by 50. One by one, it's enough. Pesach hateva b'tzidut tosim, and put an entrance to the ark in its side. Why doesn't it say in the front? Why does it have to be in the side? So the Ish B'tzidut has an interesting idea. K'mesh mevua posik, we learn in Psalms, Bakish shalom v'rodfehu. David HaMelech says, seek peace and chase it. Seek peace and run after it. And the Medrash says, why does it say seek peace and run after it? Bakish shalom im koimcho, seek peace where you are, v'rodfehu mimokim acher, and go chasing after it from another place. So not just seek peace where you are, but you have to actively go and look for peace in the world and try and make peace. So the Ish B'tzidut says, yes, but mitzidcho u'mikoychecho lo yehei shum menia l'shalom. When we say, he's interpreting the Medrash, when it says, bakish shalom mimkoymcho, it's like you, from where you are, you always have to be ready to make peace. From your perspective, there must never be a menia, something that prevents, that hinders the establishing of peace. But to go chasing peace, like we live in a world today where, you know, unless we go and make peace, the world is going to war. Right? We have to go chasing peace. But you don't know whether we want to believe that making peace is the right thing, because the alternative is dreadful. It's horrible. But this person that you want to make peace with, is he the one? Is he the right person to make peace with? That you don't know. There you have a suffix. Gam zois ein mahatzarech. So, yes, you have to chase peace. But this particular person that you want to make peace with, how can you chase him and yet not open yourself up to the wrong kind of peace? Can we call Dov and Nimtz a suffix? Because in everything there's a suffix. Because it's possible that this person shouldn't be coming in your house. So, but you're not allowed to reject peace. You're not allowed to reject this person. So that's why the Torah says, and the door for peace, put it on the side of the house. It doesn't have to be on the front. Yes, never stand in the way of peace. Always let the person in. But you don't have to have that gate in the front. It's good enough to be on the side. Tachtiyim shnim shlishim tasel. You should make it bottom story, second floor, third floor. Here is being taught how to deal with his three children. Each one is different. With Cham, who really wasn't interested in the spiritual world, the bottom floor. Speak to him, say what you need to say to him. With your son Yefes, that's higher. But with Shem, there you already go to the third level. Always the third level represents the deepest level. Speak to him from the bottom of your heart, from the deepest depth of your heart, and reveal everything to him. And now the Ish B'tzidut says, all this is advice to Noach before he became whole, when he was still on the journey, how to protect himself from the damage. But then immediately he comes out of the ark, what do we find? Then he's whole. He did exactly the opposite. He drank, he became drunk. He gets into a rage on one of his children. And he wouldn't let go afterwards when he became sober. He hung on to the resentment and he punished the child, right? Because even though I'm giving you all this rule of how to deal with rage and how not to become, you know, caught up in this mood and mind-altering experience and all these this good advice, but you know there are exceptions. And even the best rule has in it an exception, and it's the exception really that proves the rule. Because when a person is nishlam, if you're whole, then you'll know when to spread and to ignore all the boundaries. Ki azaka rotzon Hashem yisbarach, because then that's the will of God.